All right. I am doing another podcast. I need to make up a little bit for having gone 3 weeks without doing one. First of all, I hate going that long without it. And it just makes me feel better, and it I get into a groove, and my name is Bromo. Let's start with that. There is a way out. This is the podcast that is named the 18th of June. This is my 38th one already. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 2/17/09. My main focus now, since I've told my story, my share, is to have others come on. I have people from all lengths of sobriety. Somebody from last week had over 30 years, and he was terrific. Everyone that has shared is terrific, and they're a vital tool to anyone who may be on the fence, who maybe they're sober for quite a while. I don't have any kind of certificate. I don't have any certification or anything like that. I just have years of experience. 2/17/09, I think I said, I may have said earlier, is my sobriety date. My main goal is to have anyone out there, whether they're going through it or they have a family member or anybody, or anyone who just likes to listen to strength and hope and experience, listens to this podcast. I'm hoping that anybody will learn from each and every person that speaks. Like this gentleman, his name is Jack Gogler. Jack, do I say that name right?
Yeah, you got it.
All right, Jack became a good friend of mine a couple of years ago. We've always stayed in touch. How many years sober are you right now, Jack?
Over 3 years. It's a little over 3.5, but yeah.
Jack is my hero for many reasons. Jack is a hero for Jack is a hero for other people in this community. We will touch on that. It's a tremendous story. It's a story that'll boggle your mind, is what my stepdad would always say. But he told me, and I won't share the stories yet, Jack, but you told me on the phone last week when we talked, you said, quote, "If I hadn't been in a place I am now sober, I would not have been responsible." Do you remember saying that?
Definitely.
And it's so true, isn't it?
It's so true. I wouldn't be in the same place. I'd be locked up or dead.
Right. Or missing or whatever. Those are the odds. Those are the odds. Jack, how old are you?
I am 35 now.
Okay. You live in Bismarck now, not Mandan, right?
Right.
Okay.
Correct.
And
I
how
used
many
to live over in Mandan?
Yeah, you did. How many beautiful boys do you have?
I have two amazing sons.
And they really are. If you get a chance, and you'll see some of them, sometimes I'll share it on my page, and I'll do so later. You see a picture with him. Jack has long hair. You have longer hair still?
Yeah. No, that'll never change.
I love it. Now, tell everybody, are you from here?
Yeah, I was born and raised in South Bismarck.
Okay. Have you been anywhere in your life? Like, have you been to California? Have you been, not like it matters, but have you ever been out of state, cruising around, doing anything, whatever?
You know, not much, just mainly for, like, hunting and fishing. I've been up to Canada, and I've been to Alaska. But other than that, I haven't moved around too much.
What is your choice of drug or drink? Is it alcohol? Is it both?
You know, that changed throughout the years, but the last, maybe the last 8 years that I used, it was mainly just meth.
Okay. And what kind of family do you have? Any brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I've got a younger brother. He's 3 years younger, and he lives out in Chicago. And then I've got my parents, Bruce and Holly, who live south of Bismarck just a little bit.
Okay. Anybody in your family have any kind of issues with drinking or drugs?
You know, when I was young, my father drank quite a bit.
Right.
But when he saw me at my worst, he decided to quit drinking to show me that it's possible.
That
was always a huge inspiration.
That's huge. That is so terrific. And he's been
sober. It was
so
cool.
He's been sober since?
Yes.
Oh, man. Isn't that something? So he was.
It's amazing.
He was a drinker. He saw some problems in you, saw you heading down that awful road, and he decided to make an example of himself to you, right?
Right.
Holy moly, right. That's terrific.
It's something crazy for sure.
What's that like now that you don't see your father drink and that you are sober and your father's sober? You see a brand new light?
You know what? When I was younger, we had a great relationship. We hunted together and fished together.
Yeah.
And then when I started using, I didn't talk to him. I didn't like him. I'm sure it was impossible to be around me, but I took advantage of my family and everyone around me every chance I got. And the family's amazing for sticking there with me.
Yeah.
But now we have a relationship again. We talk almost every day, and we fish together, and someday we'll be hunting together again.
When you say, and you said earlier, just seconds ago, you were a different person because it was all about me, wasn't it? It's all about the drink or the drug, right? I mean, you may have cheated or stolen. That's just how it goes, right? You needed it, right?
Right. I committed any crime I could to be able to get high. I didn't care about the fallout. I didn't care about what anybody thought, or at least I put it off, you know. But, yeah, it's crazy how it just, all you care about is just that next high and making sure you can stay high.
That's pretty much the number one priority when you're in that world. I mean, there truly is. Your mind is thinking right. This. It's like a checklist. For me, it was, do I have enough booze? Do I have to go and buy more? I can't go to that store anymore because they recognize me and they know what's going on and they know I'm trying to quit, which is wrong. So check, right. Check, check. And then do I have everything I need? And then when I've got it, this is what I used to find, Jack. I would be like just blitzed with a big, huge martini bottle in the cooler. And I just opened that up thinking to myself, do I need to get more? Isn't that the crazy part? Is this going to be enough? I mean, that's just natural, right?
Yeah. For me, it was like, okay, I'd have a ton of meth that I couldn't ever possibly do by myself. But then I would start trying to find every different drug I could find for every different feeling I could have.
Yeah.
Like, if I knew I was going to have to come down on meth or off of meth, I knew that I would need something to help me through that, be it a pill or, you know, alcohol, whatever.
What ages did you start? What age were you when you started drinking or dabbling or doing? Do you remember your start?
I started drinking beer at, like, high school parties when I was younger, like around 16.
Right.
But I guess one day I had a sore throat. I think it was like bronchitis or some kind of thing with my throat, like strep or something. And it hurt so bad and I couldn't swallow.
Yeah.
And the doctors prescribed me in the clinics here in Bismarck, prescribed me, hydrocodone.
Yeah.
And from there, it was just on. Like, after I took that pill, it felt so amazing. Even though I had strep throat, I went from completely miserable to everything's like a pink cloud and everything's just warm and fuzzy feeling and just smiling instead of being miserable. And it was just on from there.
Okay, I'm kind of naive when it comes to certain pills. I loved Vicodin. That was one of my, oh my God, did I love a Vicodin. But tell me what this drug did for you. What kind of high is it? Is it a upper? What? I have no clue.
Yeah, it's a downer. It's a painkiller.
Okay.
It's like a painkiller with a bunch of Tylenol in it. So it's supposed to be so people don't, really abuse them.
Yeah.
But that was just crazy. it was just, all of a sudden, it made me completely careless and carefree.
Mm-hmm.
I was happy doing anything and everything. And then I didn't even notice it was happening, but after I took that pill that day, my parents, they were the ones who were making sure that I didn't take too much. They had my meds. And they kind of took them away from me and gave me one. But after that first pill and after it wore off, I made sure I got another one and pretended that things were worse.
Yeah.
And after I took a couple of those, then they told me no more. And my dad had, like, the same kind of meds for a shoulder injury.
Yep.
And I ended up going and stealing those from him.
Yeah.
Like, almost immediately after that first pill I was prescribed.
Well, that's par for the course, whatever that stupid saying means. That's par for the course. Hey, you can relate to this. I remember being so in love with Vicodin when I was drinking it. And I went to the dentist, and they gave me a prescription of Vicodin. And I knew I was going to go through those things like candy. So about, like, I don't know, one day in, I called the dentist, and I said, you know what? Our gal that comes out here and cleans our house accidentally threw away my whole bottle. Can I get another one?
Yeah, tragic.
And, you know, they never, I only did that once, that procedure once, because I'm pretty sure after that they monitor you. If you were to try that again a couple days later, they'd be on to you. But
yeah, I would hope so anyway.
So you found every conceivable way to either drink or use to either fuel the love for what you were doing, or did you find yourself knowing that you were getting addicted?
You know, I had no idea.
Yeah.
And I had been through all the stuff in school.
Yeah.
And heard about all these drugs are horrible for you, but I just didn't care.
Yeah.
It was such an amazing, strong, powerful feeling.
Sure.
That it took everything over. And after I couldn't get steal another pill.
Yeah.
I just started reaching out. And all of a sudden, I found all these people that did the exact same thing as me.
Yeah.
And then that's just what it became. We'd get together, either go commit crimes or figure out how everybody could get high. And it was crazy, the houses that I went to.
What kind of crimes are you talking about?
just a lot of theft.
Yeah.
Lots of it. I remember stealing lots of, like, metal and stuff, so I could take it to, like, recycle places.
Yeah, a friend of mine did that, too.
Yeah, it was insane, the work you put in to get high. It's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you the difference between California and North Dakota, as you and I both know, although you've never been in California, but you've lived here. My friend used to steal copper to fuel his addiction and drug. But he was also homeless, and he was also living in San Diego when it was 73 degrees at night, so he would sleep under a truck or whatever. You know damn well you can't do that out here in the winter. My God.
No, I tried.
You did.
I tried.
You did.
It was miserable.
Oh, how'd you do it? I can't even imagine that.
You know, I remember walking in the middle of the night in blizzards.
God.
And just being on meth and nothing really fazed me.
Wow.
I remember being sad and depressed the whole time.
Why?
Because I was just out there alone and hadn't nobody really to love or talk to or be around. And any of the people I knew was just so superficial.
Yeah.
And it was just like, hey, let's get high. And then that's it.
Did you want that, though, Jack? Did you want that even though you were in your disease? Did you want... I mean, that's a cool thing that you just told me. Did you want love and admiration and all of that? Or was the drug or the drink more important?
I pretended I didn't.
Yeah,
but deep down, that's really all I wanted.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
I just didn't know how to show that, and I didn't know how to stop.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. It just took me places that I never thought I'd be. And I'd look around and I'd see the people around me and I couldn't believe what the hell happened. You know, at some point I wasn't like that. I didn't care about feelings or being around people.
Yeah.
And that lasted for a long time. And I went in and out of prison a bunch of times, like throughout my 20s.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, after one prison stint, I started to feel like I was the only one in there that all of a sudden wasn't talking about days when they were getting high before they came in there.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was the only one that wasn't planning to get high when I got out, you know, but I still ended up getting high when I got out.
Yeah.
But it was weird realizing that I was the only one in there that, or I felt like I was the only one in there that wasn't talking about getting high or partying the whole time.
You know what's
interesting? I tell everybody.
Jack, you know what's interesting about that?
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to give you my point on that. That's very interesting that during that phase, you're surrounded by so many other men that are probably, a lot of them have given up, and their only concern and care is to get high or find something to get high. And in prison, from what I understand, it's not out of the ordinary to get high or find anything to keep your addiction going. So for you to have that glimmering light, that gleam, that concern, that tiny little hope was, for me, kind of interesting. And I can see why you went back pretty quick after you got out, because now you're out. But still, did you find that pretty amazing to think that you had some kind of glimmer of changing your life around?
You know, I remember talking with my parents when they would come visit, or I would call them.
Yeah.
And I remember telling them exactly that I felt like I was the only one in there that was only talking about positive stuff.
Wow.
And I remember thinking, okay, this is it. I'm never going to come back here.
Yeah.
I'm never going to get high again.
Yeah.
And then when I got out, I just thought it would all be perfect. And I could still talk to some of the people I knew.
Yeah.
And I was thinking I could still be around some things, not have to work on my recovery.
Yeah.
I just thought I could go back to being a normal person that didn't get high every day.
You can't, can you?
And that was,
you know, now you can't.
No. It was crazy to think that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I do.
Just to think that, okay. I've spent some time now, and now if I'm offered it, I probably won't do it.
Right.
But I think within 24 hours of getting out, it's just so crazy getting out of prison.
Yep.
And coming back to the new world, or the real world, and it's just weird. You have a lot of weird feelings, or feelings that I didn't really recognize, and I just felt like I had to kind of escape, kind of just relax, you know?
Yep. Let me ask you this. When did you... Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, buddy. Oop, your phone beeping?
Yep.
You okay? You got to get that, or are you all right?
Yes. No, I'm good. It was just an alarm.
Finish what you were just going to say, because I have a question for you. Sorry about that. I interrupt sometimes, and I really feel bad about that. Sometimes I just want to get that thought in, and I'm terrible at it. Finish what you were going to say.
Yeah, no... If I lose track of what I'm talking about like that, I mainly...
That's okay, man. I do too. Yeah. I guess I can move to the question I was going to ask you. Do you remember the feeling of when you thought to yourself, I know for me, I thought to myself, I'm either going to die by drinking on a continuous way. I don't know how I'm going to stop. Or what hit you and what made you think to yourself, I gotta do something? Or did someone come to you? Was there an intervention? You tell me.
Okay, yeah, like 4 years ago about, I was living in a small town with some girl, and she was pregnant, and I was looking at having a son, and I was still using meth every day and just committing crimes still.
Yeah.
And that was mainly it for me, was... realizing I was going to have a son kind of saved my life a lot.
Yeah, sure.
And I knew that if I was going to have a father, I wanted to be, or if I was going to have a son, I wanted to be a good father. And I didn't want to expose him to the life. Like, when I was out getting high, I went to countless homes. And I saw, it's pretty miserable to think about, but I saw so many children that would be in that element. I remember seeing a little girl when I was doing pills. I remember seeing a little girl that was in her pull-ups walking around holding a needle that she found.
Oh, gosh.
And that stuck out in my mind forever, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember another time I went to a different house, and there was a little tiny girl too that was holding a meth pipe.
Oh, jeez.
And
just
as soon as I saw that, I mean, I left,
yeah.
But I didn't do anything about it. You know, I didn't think to ever want to call the cops, because when you're in that element, they're
yeah.
kind of the enemy.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Right.
And I did not want my kids to be exposed to drugs, to the people using them that were on them, or even see anything like that. And that kind of just scared me.
That shook you a lot, didn't it? That shook you.
Right. Yeah, it was nuts. It was very sobering. Because before that point,
yeah.
I had given up with meth. I was sure that I was going to do it my whole life.
Right.
And I was sure that I was never going to stop, and that I would just have to die early on. But that I'd do meth my whole life until I died.
Were you okay? Were you okay with that? Were you thinking to yourself, "Hey, you know what? That could happen. That's probably down the road for me. But I'm okay with it. I'm getting high still." Isn't that funny? Isn't that warped? Warped.
Yeah, it's nuts how you can think any of that stuff and then just keep going along with it.
I know.
And
invincible.
And give in. Yeah. It's hard. And what scared me even more was my family around me and the people around me were getting so used to it
yeah.
that it was normal for them, and they weren't trying to help me anymore. They weren't trying. Well, they probably were in some way, but I didn't see it.
Yeah.
And I felt like everybody was just okay with it. And everybody was just used to it, and that was just going to be their life.
Yeah, they kind of backed off and realized, well, maybe you thought that they thought there's not a whole lot we can do here. I mean, this is his life, and he's, you know, that's a tough
yeah.
thing when family comes involved. That's tough, because sometimes they can come to a point where they feel like they've done enough, but they don't want to lose track of you. What more can they do, you know?
Exactly. I can't imagine what the hell they had to go through. They tell me now that they're happy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That their lives are so much better. And it's crazy. It's crazy to see them smiling.
Well, you're a big reason for that.
I mean, never seen that before.
Well, you've changed your life around. And we're going to talk about that right now. When you made that first step towards recovery, did somebody take you somewhere? Tell us where you went. Tell us if you
okay.
can.
Yeah, so I had gone to Heartview a few times in the past.
Okay.
And I really, really enjoyed it. I liked it more than the other treatment centers I had been to. And I trusted it.
Right.
And I trusted the people there.
Yeah.
And I guess I always knew in the back of my mind that could be an avenue to go through.
Sure.
And, you know, when I was finally ready to go, my father took me up there. And I remember I cried like half of the way there. I was just kind of out of my mind,
yeah.
Paranoid about stuff. I thought I was being followed everywhere I go.
Yeah. Were you scared? Scared, right?
Yeah, I was completely scared out of my mind.
Yeah.
Like, I was sure that everybody, it was like a lot of mental stuff going on with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought everybody was against me. It was kind of like schizophrenia, or at least what I understand about it.
Yeah.
I thought everybody had a secret agenda against me.
Yeah, that's what happens.
I couldn't listen to the radio. I thought the radio was talking to me.
So your dad brought you in, didn't he?
Yeah, he brought me to the treatment center up in Candu,
mm-hmm.
and it was such a great place and such great people, and everybody trying to do the same thing I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I had done it before. You know, I'm so lucky that I didn't give up based on the fact that I had done it all before.
Yeah.
And I had thought that I was going through treatment and that this was it and that this would stick and I'd be sober after this. And I had thought that before.
Yeah.
Like many times, and it just never worked out. I guess I just never put in enough work.
Yeah.
And never changed the people that I was around or talked to.
It's not that easy, is it?
And
it's not that easy.
You got to have it set in your mind that you're going to change everything.
Yeah.
Or nothing will change at all.
Yeah.
And you might change a couple of things, but slowly it will just work out to where you keep those people in your phone, you keep those contacts in case you have a really bad day. You know exactly where to get what you want.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy, you know.
How long did you stay there for, Heartview? How long did you do that for?
I think it was 28 days.
Yeah.
Yeah, 28 days, and then I came back to Bismarck and lived with my parents for a little bit after that.
You were in Mandan living with your mom in 2021, correct?
No, I was just living there, but my mom was visiting.
Okay, okay.
And that one day, yeah.
And you have, we're going to get to this, and this is the, I mean, his whole story is amazing. And everyone else that's shared is amazing. But this guy became my hero in 2021. And then his cape that he wears from time to time struck again. And we're going to get into this. So in 2021, your mom was visiting. You had two kids at this point. Is that right?
Yes.
You're living in Mandan, and it's cold. It's a winter day. I can't tell you exactly what the exact date was. It was 2021.
No. Yeah, either can I, but there was like, on the curbs, there was like 5 feet of snow.
Yes,
you know?
I remember. And everything happened, and I'm sure it's implanted in your head like slow motion.
Very much.
Tell everybody the start of what happened, what you saw when you looked through the kitchen window, I believe it was. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. I was standing in the kitchen of the trailer I lived in with my mother, and we were talking, standing beside the sink, and I'll never forget just the craziness of it. Like, I was looking out the window as she was talking to me, and I have no idea what we're talking about, but while she was talking, I was looking straight out, and there's a neighbor's trailer right across the street.
Yeah.
And you just heard and felt this huge boom. Like, I had blown stuff up before, like propane tanks and stuff like that.
Right.
Fun.
Right.
And this reminded me a lot of that, the noise and the feeling.
Yeah.
But it sent such a shockwave through the house that I watched the trailer across the street, like, explode. I watched the window shoot out of the trailer, like,
God.
A whole window.
Yeah.
Shoot across the yard, and the whole top of the trailer blew up into the air, and it was raining down like insulation and shingles everywhere.
Like you see in the movies. Like you see in the movies, right?
Right.
God.
Right. It was so surreal.
Yeah.
There was just stuff just floating to the ground. And after that happened, I couldn't say anything. Like, my mother and I we kind of like blinked for a couple. It felt like so long.
Yeah.
But I couldn't say anything, and we just looked at each other, and there was just this crazy, eerie silence, and it felt like a whole minute went by. I think it was just a couple seconds.
Yeah.
But right away, she said, "Did something fall on your house?" I said, "No, that was an explosion."
Mm-hmm.
And we were looking across the street, and my mom said, "Is there kids in there?" And I said, yeah, I'm not sure if kids live there, but there's a couple that live there, and there's kids there sometimes.
Yeah.
And as soon as I said that, we didn't say anything else. We both ran out of the trailer and ran through the street. I remember getting up to that trailer as quick as I could.
Right.
And there was just stuff floating down from the sky still, like embers. And there was smoke pouring out of the kitchen or the window that shot the hole where the window was.
Yeah.
There was like a good foot of smoke just billowing out the top of it and just super thick black smoke going up. And I remember running up to that trailer And I looked inside, and it was such a crazy scene. Everything in the trailer was completely messed up.
Mm-hmm.
There was a kitchen table in the middle of it that was broken half the long way.
Yeah.
And it was a very sturdy table.
Yeah.
And it was completely broken half, and then there wasn't really any kind of way to go to the back of the trailer. But what I saw at the back of the trailer was, like, burned, or, like, stuck in my mind forever. It was an elderly couple, and the lady's hair was on fire.
Oh, Jesus.
It was so weird to see somebody's hair on fire with the hair, like, falling down, like, still on fire.
Yeah.
And these people were just staring at me, like everything was totally okay. And they were sitting on the floor in the back of that trailer, and there was a big, huge fire right next to them, too, where all that smoke was coming from.
This is where I want to stop you real quick. This isn't like the movies.
Yeah.
You think you're watching a movie, and you're like, ah, you know what? I'd probably have, or like a car on fire. I'd probably have no problem at all running over to the window like Johnny Superman and going, hey, it's not that hot. But you could feel the heat as you were crossing the street, couldn't you? You can feel the heat get more and more intense, couldn't you?
But I could feel the heat before I got to that side of the street.
Yeah.
And I got up to the hole.
Yeah.
And all the siding was all, like, melting.
God.
And just all that smoke pouring out. Like, it's exactly how you see in the movies where there's that thick level of smoke up above and you're supposed to be down below.
Yeah.
It was so weird. And luckily I had seen all that and knew not to put your head up in the smoke. And I kind of just shimmied throughout that trailer and over that kitchen table and got to that couple, and I tried talking to them. And they weren't really saying anything.
They were in shock. They were in complete shock.
They were kind of like in a dazed look, and they were talking about a dog.
Yeah.
And I kept telling them, nope, we got to go, you know?
Yeah.
Don't worry about the dog. Let's just get out of here. And I guess I decided to go and help the woman first, because that's what you're supposed to do. Women and children first, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. And radio disc jockeys, by the way.
Yeah, of course. That's a close second. Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry about that.
It's all right. It's funny. I get the lady up to her feet, and she can kind of walk, and I had to kind of hold her up, but I had to kind of pull her across that kitchen table.
Yeah.
But she got up to the window, and I got her handed off to my mom, and my mom got her out the window while I ran back to the guy in the back. And it was just such a weird scene, and they weren't wearing any clothes, so I kind of blocked a lot of it out mentally.
Yeah.
I didn't really notice anything except for a bunch of, like, melted skin and stuff that didn't really make sense.
No. How could that? That's so surreal.
Yeah. Yeah. It was strange to see it. The skin didn't make sense to me.
No.
That's a weird thing to say.
Yeah. You got them both out. You got them both out of the house.
Yeah.
The guy
was a bigger guy, and I had no idea how hard it is to move somebody when they're not trying.
Oh, sure.
It's insanely hard.
Because every dead weight in that person is just shocked and stunned, and they don't want to move. So a lot of them say that they couldn't move. You got them out of the house. The authorities showed up. The firefighters showed up. I understand that they took a helicopter flight to Fargo. Is that right?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, and one of them passed away eventually. The lady.
Yeah, the female ended up dying.
Yeah.
It was tragic.
When you, I went over there and took, after I had interviewed you, remember when I got a hold of you?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I went over there and took some pictures, and you can probably research it on the walleye, but you can for sure, actually, because I'm about to tell you something else that'll blow your mind. You can actually see some of the pictures of devastation of the fire, of the just the complete, like he described it, bam, you know, the heat.
Yeah, it was just the biggest explosion. People like over a block away said they felt stuff, and it knocked everything off my walls.
Now, did you realize at the time? Did you realize as the days went by and settled in that you were a hero?
No, no, yeah. That's still weird. Still weird to hear.
Yeah, this is how humble Jack is. Did you ever have any nightmares over this scene? Did you ever think about using or drinking because you got to do something to get your mind? At this point, you were over a year sober, right? That was in 21, right?
Right.
Okay, did you have any temptations of using or drinking again?
You know, not really. I guess I thought about it. You know, I would have thoughts, but I'm pretty good at putting those negative thoughts back behind me now.
Yeah, you are.
And I was then, too. But it was mostly just feeling afterwards, it was just feeling very strange. Like,
yeah.
I had a ton of adrenaline from it.
Yeah.
But I just felt kind of like I wasn't there, but I was for a couple days.
Sure.
It's hard to explain, you know?
Well.
But my family and everybody that my work, everybody that I talked to was really cool and was there for me. And it was like a weird bonding experience with my mother, you know?
Well, it's something, Jack, that you deserved. And, you know, I'm guessing that what kept you from relapsing or doing any of that is because now you have two boys. Now you have some tools that you've learned through recovery. You're seeing what life is about as strong as you are. We're going to get into another deal that'll blow everybody's mind. And the experience you said of staying sober, because before you probably couldn't have handled it when you were drunk or when you were high. Here's the deal. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, if I was high and that would have happened, I would have never made it over there. I would have just stood in my trailer and watched the fire burn.
Sure.
Like all the other people that were standing there.
And there were others. That's the thing. That's the sad thing about life sometimes. A lot of people are frozen. A lot of people don't want to get involved. A lot of people don't know how to get involved. Now, here's the deal.
Right.
Back in that same year, 2021, late in 2021, a high school student went missing, one of our local schools. He was caught on film walking the hallways. Then the last description of him was when he was seen at a bridge. This was in 2021. This poor guy and his whole family could not find him. This guy was missing for years since 2021. They had search parties. They had people that would come. I talked to a detective who said he was going to retire, but his whole train of thought was to find this gentleman, this young man. His family had not changed a thing about his room. They kept all his Christmas presents unopened, and in the return of this young man, the years went by, and every once in a while, somebody would conduct another search party, another huge search party to go up and down the river. People didn't want to give up, and I don't blame them. I didn't want to give up. But unfortunately, as the years went by and the time went by, the odds are not good. What happened two Sundays ago is just the most incredible thing, and it happens for a reason. I believe in a higher power, which is God for me, and I believe things happen for a reason. And I believe Jack, I want to say your name right, Jack Gogler, right?
Yeah, that was
Jack.
Perfect.
Jack Gogler was put on this earth for many reasons, but one was what he did in 2021 with his mom, and two Sundays ago, there he is fishing, and I'm going to let you tell the story.
Okay, yeah. I was taking my friend from work and her husband, Lexi and Trevor, and their kids and my kids, and we were all going out to play on the sandbar, and the kids were like catching toads, and we were playing in the water, and it was an awesome time. It was such a beautiful day.
Yeah, it was.
And then it was great, and we were headed back to where we started, and I was driving a pontoon, and I was joking around with my buddy Trevor and his kids, too, mm-hmm. and I told his kids, I said, hey, your dad just told me that I should go try and drive in between all these logs in the river and all these big trees. Oh. And he didn't say that, but I was kind of just joking around. Mm-hmm. And then I started driving around into those trees. And it was so surreal, too. I passed this guy really, really slowly, and as soon as I saw it and got up close,
yeah,
it was like everything in me just dropped. My heart, my stomach, like, sank down. And I told those guys, I said, I'm sorry. Our day is going to completely, drastically change.
Yeah.
What did you see?
Yeah, tell everybody what you saw immediately. What did you see?
Okay. Yeah, I saw a body that was just stuck on some trees and floating in the river. And I got up to it. Gosh. I saw part of it.
Yeah.
It was kind of floating.
Yeah.
And it just didn't look like what I usually see in the river, like trees. And you see lots of stuff in the river. Like,
sure.
A couple of tree piles before that, we saw like a dead deer or something.
Yeah.
In the trees.
Yeah.
And it was just so weird. Like, you know, once I saw it, I had such a strange feeling of like, oh shit, or oh crap, you know.
You're okay. You're okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, and I told my buddy and his wife, and they said, no way, you know, no way. I said, yep.
Yeah.
We got to go. And they said, let's go check it out. I was like, okay, we're going to have to call the police and everything.
Yeah.
And we went back for another look and told the kids all to go to one side of the pontoon.
Yeah.
So they couldn't see anything, and we did our best. Like, when I told them I saw a dead body, I just said it as quiet as I could.
Yeah.
And like, and they could see the serious look on my face.
Mm-hmm.
And we got up close, and they both looked, and they said, oh my God, yeah, this is it. And so I just, all I was really worried about was making sure the kids didn't see it.
Yeah.
Because that's a lot of therapy I don't want them to go through.
Oh, no kidding. No kidding.
Yeah. Right, and so we went and parked right by it, and it was just such a weird feeling of, like, time kind of freezing, kind mm-hmm. of like when that explosion hit.
Yeah.
And we had to call the 911, and then sheriffs were very fast, and they met us out by the river.
Yeah.
At my parents' house, and they jumped on the pontoon, and we went, because I'm sure they had to go make sure that it was actually what I said it was.
Right.
Because I'm sure people could, like, it could be like a mannequin or something.
Yeah.
You know, who knows?
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, and I would not know if I saw something like that, because, like you said, that is surreal. That's not something you see
right.
every single day or year or in your lifetime.
Ever, yeah.
In your lifetime.
Yeah.
Now, have people said to you, now, wait a minute, Jack, this guy was missing since 2021. How could this guy have you know, I'm not trying to be morbid.
I had this discussion today.
How could
this
person, yeah, like I'm sure the whole part of his body was not intact, but you saw enough to where the police came out and they were able to identify him through his dental records. I believe the family's now asking for more DNA, but the dental records are usually what confirms things. Without being troubling you at all, you can see what was a body, correct? God.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I could definitely tell it was a body under the water.
God.
And it's still trying to make sense to me. Like, how could a body be in the river for so long? And I talked with my father about that.
Yep.
And I've spent my whole life out on the Missouri River.
Right.
And grew up next to it and still go there every weekend.
Wow.
And my dad, exact same. He lives right next to the river and he goes out on it all the time.
Yeah.
And he told me, and it sounded right, you know, it gets so cold.
Yeah.
Way down deep in there.
Sure.
And if you're completely covered up with dense sand.
Yep.
You know, it's just really hard to imagine that. But yeah, I think he's right. It makes a lot more sense than any other thing I could come up with.
And you're caught behind some tree, or the theory was he jumped off the bridge because the last sighting of him was near this bridge here in Bismarck.
Right.
And the theory is that a lot of people came to realize that he probably jumped off, either got swept down and got stuck under something else that got lodged in permanently for quite a while, for years, since 2021, for years.
Right.
Now, my line of thinking is my higher power said, well, I'm going to throw something else at Jack, because Jack, back in 2021, became a hero. I want him. And I know people are thinking, what a reach that you're doing here, Bromo. You're bringing this guy on to talk about recovery, and then you're talking about this. But there's a reason for it. You had said to me on that conversation, I'll never forget it, just last week or something, you said, you know what, if I was not sober and didn't have some years of experience under me, whatever, years, minutes, months, I wouldn't have had the fortitude how did you put it? I wouldn't have had the right knowledge and the courage I wouldn't have been there.
If I was using, I'd probably have been either in prison,
yeah,
or in a basement getting high somewhere, or or in a treatment center, you know, or dead.
You ever think about that, Jack? Do you ever think about what a crazy deal it is that you became intertwined with different families back in 2021, and just recently you brought closure to a local family here that for the longest time was left with still doubt of where their son was, and that's you that just brought that closure to him.
You know, I can't imagine what it would be to be like to be a family, and my prayers and my heart goes out to them.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine how tough that must be.
Yeah.
At all. Just, you know, I have two little boys, and my heart breaks for them. I don't know what else to say.
No, I mean, you said it all, Jack. I imagine down the road you'll be able to explain to your boys what happened that day on that Sunday. It was two Sundays ago, right? It wasn't just last Sunday, it was two, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was two Sundays ago.
And here's the thing. I remember seeing just a small blanket post on your Facebook saying, I found a dead body. And I remember thinking, what? And then I saw one of our local news stations actually printed that. That's when I got a hold of you. And I, wait a minute, I put two and two together. And I go, I think that's Jack. Because they didn't say your name or nothing. Did anybody anywhere around acknowledge who you were, that you, the person was that found him? I haven't seen your name in anywhere. Just curious.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so.
And that doesn't bother you, right? Because you're not after being a hero. You're not what it's all about. You're not trying to be a hero, man. You're just trying to, you know what I'm saying?
No,
that's not about you.
Yeah. I wasn't worried about that.
No.
I was just mainly still having tons of like adrenaline,
oh,
and
of course,
lots of weird thoughts and feelings. And you know, I told myself I had to get back out on the river.
Yeah.
And so I went again this weekend. And I went kayaking.
Yeah.
And it was so strange because I kept looking around and I kept expecting to see a dead body somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so strange after that.
Here's what I want to tell you that impressed me, and you've always impressed me since I've known you, but a lot of those, a lot of your friends and Facebook people will nod their head when they hear this. I remember the comments that kept pouring in. Jack, that was you. Jack, was that what you're talking about? Dude, you're a hero. And you would right away write back, no, I'm not. Or I did the right thing. I did. You backpedaled all the hero compliments from people, and they all know that you are a hero. That's how modest you are, and that's part of what it's like to be in recovery. It's modest and doing the right thing like you did and being sober, you know.
You know, it's too strange to be called a hero.
I get it. But you are to me, and you are to many others, and you are to this family who longed for the longest time to know what happened to their son.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, I've had this talk with a bunch of people, and everybody says at least that family will get some closure.
Absolutely. You
know, that's all that really matters.
Here's how awesome Jack is. I'm trying not to laugh at him, but I wrote the article, and I misspelled his last name like a idiot I am. That thanks a lot there, Bromo, for going back and checking out your spelling. And he was so modest. He writes back, great story, except, you know, I live in Bismarck now. He didn't even mention that I misspelled his last name. And one of his friends said, hey, wait a minute. And I wrote that guy immediately and said, dude, I am so sorry. I'm an idiot. And he was really courteous back to me. But what I'm trying to say to you is the world needs more of you around, Jack. And
yeah, that's so weird to hear you say that and to hear all these positive things. Because my whole adult life, I'd never imagine anybody ever say that about me or to me.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Remember when you were in the prison and you were looking around and you saw 99.99% of the other guys there that were a doom. They didn't want to change anything around. They wanted more addiction. They wanted to just wallow in their awfulness. And then you had a glimmer of hope that one day life won't be like that. And look what happened. Isn't that crazy how life goes?
It's so wild, man.
Now you're going to pick up your two boys in just a couple minutes, and I sure appreciate the time you gave me. I know you got a tight schedule. Is there anything, Jack, that you want to say to anybody out there? You've heard my podcast before, and you know that when people share and everyone has a different share, remember how it was when you were trying to get sober. Is there a way out, Jack?
Yeah, you know, I feel like if I can do it, I feel like there's definitely a chance for anybody, no matter how far along you are or if you've given up hope. I feel like anybody, if they just want it and they're willing to let go of their past,
yep,
any of the mistakes they've made,
yep,
any of their relationships that they don't really want to lose, if they can do any of that, it's possible to have a beautiful life again.
Yeah, it really is. What are your sons'
names? It's possible to love people and to be loved. It's just amazing.
What are your sons' names again?
Yeah, my oldest son's name is Jackson Skywalker Goggler.
Cool.
And my youngest son's name is Owen Allen Goggler.
Well, listen, when your sons can listen to this and realize what a hero your dad is and what a cool guy he is, and to your parents and your family, they did a good job with you, buddy. I mean, you know, you should be, your life is tremendous.
They definitely did, and they put up with way more than anybody should have. You know, they put up with so much. And I just want to say one time thank you to my family and to the people that I know now,
yeah,
that are in my life, and just thank you for being there for me and believing in me. And I love you guys, and just once again for that family, I love you guys, and I hope you guys can get through this, and just know that, I guess, I've got a lot of love for you guys. I don't know what else to say.
Let me counter with this. Jack, and then we'll end this. You had said that your family had put up a lot more than you probably thought should have. They did that because they knew you were worth it.
Right.
And they knew you were worth it, and that love just kept them, and you are worth it. Jack, hang on real quick, okay? I'm going to end this, and thank you, Jack, so much for being on.
Yeah, thank you, Bomo.
Hang on real quick with me, pal, and there it is. This guy's my hero, flat out. Hero for many reasons. Here's the thing. It doesn't matter how many things you've done in the past. You heard Jack say, in the future, things can turn around. There is a way out. There truly is. And it's worth it. It's worth it for you and your family and your loved ones. Again, thank you so much for being part of this and listening. If you know of anybody who feels they may be in trouble, or family members or anybody, I'm just telling you to please see if they can give this a listen. And there is a way out.